Welcome to History in a Year, America's first 250 years.
Join us every single day as we journey from the Revolution of 1776 to the 250th anniversary of the United States.
You can find every episode and join the discussion at pointedwords.com. I'm Stephen.
And I'm Leah.
It is January 3rd. Welcome to Episode 3. Yesterday, we set the stage. It is 1763, the war is over, and Great Britain is broke. They have a massive national debt, a standing army in America that costs a fortune to maintain, and a population at home that is taxed to the breaking point.
So Prime Minister George Grenville decides it is time for the Americans to pay their fair share. And honestly, looking at the numbers from London, it didn't seem unreasonable. The average Briton paid about 26 shillings a year in taxes. The average American paid about 6 pence. That means a British citizen was paying 50 times more in taxes than an American.
Grenville thought he was being a responsible accountant. He wasn't trying to punish the colonies. He was just trying to balance the books. So in March 1765, Parliament passed the Stamp Act.
Now, we learn about the Stamp Act in grade school, but we often miss exactly how it worked. It wasn't a tax on stamps like postage stamps. It was a tax on paper.
Right. It required that almost every piece of printed paper used in the colonies had to be produced on special stamped paper produced in London. This included legal documents, wills, ship's papers, newspapers, pamphlets, and even playing cards and dice.
If you wanted to get married, the license had a tax. If you wanted to sell land, the deed had a tax. If you wanted to play poker at the tavern, the deck of cards had a tax. It touched every part of daily life.
But the money wasn't the real problem. The tax itself was actually quite low. The problem was the principle. This was a direct tax.
Explain the difference, because this is the core of the argument.
Before 1765, the British government had only taxed trade. These were called duties or external taxes. For example, if you imported molasses from the Caribbean, you paid a duty at the port. The colonists accepted this because they agreed that Parliament had the right to regulate the empire's trade.
But the Stamp Act was different. It wasn't regulating trade. It was an internal tax designed purely to raise revenue from the pockets of the colonists. And the colonists argued that only their own assemblies, like the Virginia House of Burgesses or the Massachusetts General Court, had the right to tax them directly.
This brings us to the famous phrase, no taxation without representation.
The colonists argued that because they didn't vote for members of Parliament in London, Parliament couldn't tax them. They could only be taxed by the people they voted for. It was about consent.
Parliament argued back with a theory called virtual representation. They said, look, most people in England can't vote either. But Parliament represents the interests of the entire empire. So you are virtually represented.
The Americans didn't buy it. As soon as the news of the Stamp Act arrived in the spring of 1765, the colonies exploded. And the first spark didn't come from Boston. It came from Virginia.
Patrick Henry. He was a young, fiery lawyer who had just been elected to the House of Burgesses. He stood up on May 29, 1765, and proposed the Virginia Resolves.
It was a radical speech. He basically said that anyone who supported the Stamp Act was an enemy of the colony. Legend says he shouted, Caesar had his Brutus, Charles I his Cromwell, and George III may profit by their example.
When he said that, the Speaker of the House shouted, treason! And Henry supposedly replied, if this be treason, make the most of it.
Virginia's defiance electrified the other colonies. But while Virginia talked, Boston took action. And by action, I mean violence.
In Boston, a group of shopkeepers and artisans formed a secret society. They called themselves the Loyal Nine, but they would soon grow into the Sons of Liberty.
Their target was Andrew Oliver. He was a wealthy merchant who had been appointed as the stamp distributor for Massachusetts. Basically, he was the guy hired to collect the tax.
On the morning of August 14, 1765, people in Boston woke up to see an effigy of Andrew Oliver hanging from a giant elm tree on Newbury Street. This tree became known as the Liberty Tree.
Next to the effigy was a boot with a devil climbing out of it. A pun on the Prime Minister, Lord Bute. A mob gathered. The sheriff was told to cut it down, but he looked at the angry crowd and said, nope, not doing it.
That night, the mob cut the effigy down and paraded it through the streets. They marched to the waterfront, where Andrew Oliver had built a new warehouse. They believed this was where he planned to store the stamps.
They tore the building down, I don't mean they damaged it. They leveled it. They took the timbers and used them to start a bonfire outside Oliver's actual house.
Then they beheaded the effigy and threw stones through Oliver's windows. Andrew Oliver was smart. He had already fled to a fort in the harbor, but the message was received. The next day, he resigned.
But the mob wasn't done. 12 days later, on August 26th, they went after an even bigger target, Thomas Hutchinson, the lieutenant governor of Massachusetts.
Hutchinson was a native-born American, but he was a firm believer in British law. He actually didn't like the Stamp Act privately, but he believed it had to be enforced because it was the law.
The mob didn't care about his private feelings. They marched to his mansion in the North End. Hutchinson and his family barely escaped out the back door before the crowd broke in with axes.
This was one of the most brutal acts of destruction in colonial history. They didn't just break windows. They drank his wine cellar dry. They smashed his furniture. They tore the wainscoting off the walls. They even climbed up to the roof and tore off the cupola. They worked through the night until the house was basically a shell.
Hutchinson was also a historian. He had been writing a massive history of Massachusetts. The mob took his manuscript, years of work, and threw it in the mud in the street.
This violence shocked everyone. Even Samuel Adams and the Sons of Liberty thought it went too far. They wanted organized resistance, not anarchy. But it proved a point. You could not enforce this law.
By the time the Stamp Act was supposed to go into effect on November 1, 1765, every single stamp distributor in the colonies had resigned. They were all too terrified to do the job.
So, on November 1st, business just stopped. The courts couldn't open because they didn't have stamped paper. Ships couldn't leave the harbor.
But then, something amazing happened. The colonists just decided to ignore the law. The courts opened anyway. Newspapers printed issues without the stamp. They called it business as usual.
At the same time, the colonies started to coordinate. In October, they held the Stamp Act Congress in New York. 9 colonies sent delegates. This was the first time they had really come together to act as a united front against Britain.
They sent a petition to the king, declaring their loyalty but insisting on their rights. But the real pressure came from the merchants.
Right. The Sons of Liberty organized a boycott. Non-importation agreements. They refused to buy British goods until the act was repealed.
And this hit Britain where it hurt. The wallet. British merchants in London started losing money. Factories in England started laying off workers because no one in America was buying their cloth or tools.
So the British merchants went to Parliament and demanded the repeal of the Stamp Act. Not because it was wrong, but because it was bad for business.
In March 1766, after just 1 year, Parliament caved. They repealed the Stamp Act.
When the news reached America, there was wild rejoicing. They rang church bells. They built statues of King George III because they thought he had saved them from the evil Parliament. They thought they had won.
But they missed the fine print.
On the exact same day Parliament repealed the Stamp Act, they passed a new law, the Declaratory Act.
It was short and terrifying. It stated that Parliament had the authority to make laws for the colonies in all cases whatsoever.
Basically, they said, we are backing down on this tax, but we reserve the right to do whatever we want to you in the future.
It was a ticking time bomb. The Americans celebrated the victory, ignoring the threat. They thought the crisis was over.
But the British government still needed money. The debt hadn't disappeared. And now they had a point to prove. They weren't going to let the colonists push them around.
So the Stamp Act crisis created the template for the revolution. It taught the Americans how to organize. It created the Sons of Liberty. It gave them their slogan. And it taught them that if they fought back, Britain would blink.
But next time, Britain wouldn't blink. Next time, they would send more soldiers.
Join us tomorrow for episode 4. The tension in Boston reaches a breaking point. A snowy night, a lone sentry, and a command to fire. We cover the Boston Massacre.
You can find every episode at pointedwords.com. I'm Stephen.
And I'm Leah.
And this is our story.